everybody, and welcome to episode 11 of the Football Absurdity Podcast. My name is Jeff Crisco, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Mike Valverde. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thank you. Hey, I was going to ask you, okay, so...
Yes, sir.
Matt Nagy, I believe today, came out with Jordan Howard saying...
Three down back.
What is this coach speak at the finest, or do you actually buy it?
I kind of buy it. I think that they're going to split Tariq Cohen out wide more. They'll both be on the field at the same time, I think. But I like the idea that Jordan Howard will be out there for all three downs because I think Cohen's a little small to do some of the things that they need to ask him to do as a third down back, like pass blocking, for example. So I like that idea, and I think Cohen will be more of a gadget guy.
I would actually love that so much. I drafted Jordan Howard in my home league in the third round. So I'm hoping that that's the case.
Standard or PPR?
PPR.
PPR. Awesome. That he should take a step forward this year in catching passes, but that's pretty good value there for him. So today we're going to finish out our team-by-team preview. We're going to take a look at the AFC and NFC Souths. Just do a sleeper breakout bust from each team. AFC South is a division near and dear to Mike's heart because he is an Indianapolis Colts fan.
Oh yeah.
The NFC South is near and dear to my heart only because my wife and I love New Orleans. So not the team, not the Saints, the city itself. We went to Jazz Fest last year. It was awesome. It's a great,
I gotta do that. I really gotta do that.
Oh yeah. It's a great town. It's hot. It's super hot because it's in May. But it's well worth it. It's a lot of fun. So before we do that today, I just wanted to do a quick review of what we got going on the website. We still have beer sheets, fully customizable fantasy football cheat sheet. You fill it out once, you bookmark the result, and you will have the most up-to-date projections whenever you pull that thing back up. So even if you draft next weekend, go in there, fill out your stuff now, bookmark your result, and right before you go into your draft next weekend, pull it up, download it, print it out, and you will have a cheat sheet with the most up-to-date projections. We also have some rankings up on the site, finally. We have fantasy football auction values from Evan Hoovler. Waleed is working on and working through his player profiles, and I today finished my team-by-team previews. Every single team, a sleeper, breakout, bust, nice quick primer. For every single team to let you know players to look at and players to avoid. Next week, we're going to have the guys from the website on with me and Mike. We're going to have Evan and Waleed on. We're going to have a battle royale. We're going to get into some knockdown, dragout arguments. Does that sound pretty good, Mike?
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I've been looking forward to that since we talked about it last week. So
yeah,
I'm already pumped.
It's going to be exciting. But today, before we get into the division previews, we are going to do... we'll call it our final round of pick your poison. Everybody should be drafting pretty soon. We don't need to be talking about draft prep anymore or anything like that. So for our last round of pick your poison for the 2018 season, we're going to talk about, I call them trendy late round sleepers, mid to late round sleepers. These are guys going in rounds 11 through 13. You've got Kenny Golladay going at 11-11, Michael Gallup going at 12-9. John Brown going at 12-12, and Anthony Miller going at 13-2. We talked a lot about Gallup, a little bit about Miller. We haven't talked so much about John Brown or really Kenny Golladay just because they've been sort of late come-ups to the sleeper game. They've really popped in preseason. So, Mike, those are your four guys. Golladay late 11th, Gallup late 12th, John Brown late 12th, Anthony Miller early 13th. Pick your poison. Who are you going for there?
You know, I really like both Gallup and Miller, but in a PPR league, I have to go with Miller just because of what he's been doing all preseason long, which is the only thing we have to go on considering he's a rookie. So with that said, I think the opportunity and volume are going to be there. I like their running game an awful lot, and so I'm going to have to definitely go with Anthony Miller.
All right, Anthony Miller. I do appreciate you leaving my crush for me. My preseason, offseason crush, Michael Gallup. If you're in a league with me, you're not going to get Michael Gallup. Just a heads up. kid has vice grips for hands. He's been running with the first team in practice, and I heard today he was on the field for, I don't chart this, for 85% of Dak Prescott's snaps in the preseason. So he's running with the ones, and he's going to be, at least we'll call it by week four, Dak Prescott's number one option. He's going to be, like you said, with Anthony Miller, he's going to be a PPR machine. I think he's going to be Prescott's first, second, and third read. Now, this does take a bit of a hampering with the sudden mash unit that makes up the Dallas offensive line. You got an autoimmune disease and a knee injury just popping up in the last week for a couple of guys along that line. So it will take a step back. I do think that that won't affect Gallup so much as it will Zeke Elliott, but I'm a big fan of Michael Gallup going in the 12th round. I might consider taking him in the 10th just to make sure I get him, but that's probably a ceiling for me. I couldn't justify taking a guy that I might have use for him in the first 25% of the season in a single digit round. The other guys we didn't even talk about, the guys I said we don't mention, we didn't talk about him. Give me 10 seconds on Kenny Golladay. Go.
So Kenny Golladay is going to go deep, 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 and catch some passes.
That's what he'll do. He is good at the point of catch. What I saw, though, little trouble getting open, but the way he can high point the ball and go get it, even when he's covered, he's open. He's one of those guys. John Brown, trendy sleeper last year, had a cyst on his spine, has sickle cell traits that hamper recovery. He blames his 2017 injury issues on the cyst. I'm not going to rule out sickle cell. I'm fine. He's one of those players we talked about last week, Mike, that you're fine being wrong on. I'm fine being wrong on John Brown. I'll let somebody else take him. Though he might take a step forward this season, his value might go up. His targets might go up because Hayden Hurst, do you see he got foot surgery today?
Oh, really? No.
Yeah. They think he'll be back within the first couple weeks of the season. They said 3 to 4 weeks, but I'm not feeling great about those foot fracture surgeries that might have him off of my draft boards entirely.
Yeah, because that's something that'll probably linger, even if he's healthy. I could see that nagging him all year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same type of thing you saw from Julio Jones a few years ago. You will see from Greg Olsen this year where they get these foot surgeries and they just really aren't fully healthy until they've had like a year and a half after him. That's one of the reasons why I think Jordan Reed will bounce back this year, because he was dealing with foot issues before. So that's something to worry about with Hurst, but he was sort of a late round flyer tight end anyway. So you just nick him off your board and go find somebody else. Go find Ricky Seals-Jones, ASJ, Eric Ebron. Who else we got? Mike Gesicki, George Kittle. A whole mess of guys that you could get at tight end. So that's been.
What about Swain? Do you see him as any value, or do you see him just in the mix with all the other Cowboys receivers?
See, I think that there's been a lot of copy and paste from Jason Witten to Swain. I just don't think that obviously not on the same talent level as Jason Witten. And I think that copy and pasting Witten's role into the 2018 offense is a little iffy. There's too many Cowboys tight ends that could get, 25 to 30 catches each to make up that role in the 2018 offense that I don't really want any of their tight ends. What do you think?
Yeah, I watched some of the preseason game and he looked like he was on the field, but they didn't look like he was going to him too much. And he's a Jason Witten clone, as you're mentioning, but I don't know if he's still struggling with the playbook or what it is, but I kind of have him on my radar for a waiver wire pick. We'll see what he does during the regular season, but I think he's someone you definitely want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible one of the guys emerges from that tight end group. I know that they got the rookie Schultz, who is really, he's a blocking tight end that he's not going to steal anything from anybody. But Blake Jarwin, Rico Gathers, those are more pass catchers. That's what I was talking about. But like, there's a handful of guys there that they could all just mushed together. You won't want any of them. But if one of them emerges, absolutely. That's a great, great call there, Mike.
Thank you.
All right. So from one great call to another, let's go to the AFC South. And we are starting with alphabetically. That would be the Houston Texans, correct?
Oh, you're on it.
Yeah. I had to pull up the alphabet to make sure I got that one right. But fun fact, they go H-I-J. I don't know why that's fun, but Houston, Indianapolis, Jacksonville always gets a nice little massages my brain a little bit. Makes me feel good. Yeah, H-I-J. Yeah.
Every time.
They need to move from Tennessee to Kentucky, become the Kentucky Titans. Then you have H-I-J-K. And then, buddy, that'll be... So, all right, let's get started with the Colts, your team, a team near and dear to your heart. Start wherever you want. Sleeper, breakout, bust, however you want to do this.
I would like to start with the Colts, but I have to go.
Oh, Houston. God, it's been a long day. I was telling Mike before the podcast, it's been a long day. So let's start with Houston, a team, whatever the opposite of near and dear to your heart is.
Yeah, exactly. So my breakout is Will Fuller. And the reason why I like the fact the way him and Deshaun Watson were just in sync during those whatever 5-6 games that Watson was playing. And it just seemed like he was just blowing it up. A couple reasons for that is he has just blazing speed. He clocked a 4.32 in the 40 at his combine. Another thing is that I like the way he just seems like he has breakout potential. To see that, you have to look at just his games. He has a lot of dud games because he's a lot like Ted Ginn, but I think he's a step above in talent-wise over Ted Ginn. And you just look at all the different games, and he's just blown up in so many different games. But he also goes on those long stretches of just doing absolutely nothing. But with Watson back there, I think those absolutely nothing games are going to become a stretch of 5 to a stretch of 3. I think those are going to narrow down quite a bit. So with that said, I think you're going to see a lot of point production and a lot of aggression going forward. And because of that, he is my breakout player.
All right. I like that pick. I actually wrote about him for the website for my breakout pick as well. You know, he was incredibly efficient with Deshaun Watson last year. He there's no chance he keeps up that efficiency, but at the same time, he'll get more targets, I believe. You know, he had 3.25 catches a game last season and turned those into 17.7 fantasy points. That was with Deshaun Watson. So I like that pick. That's a good one.
Thank you. I also like the fact that Watson can keep the play alive for him to get downfield, which is so important. So I think that's another reason why you're going to see him, the long stretch is getting less and less. So now that leads me to my sleeper pick. And my sleeper pick, I have... Well, this might have changed, but Deontay Foreman. And the reason why it might have changed is because it doesn't look like he's bouncing back from his ACL as well as I thought he would be. But there you go. He has his chance to start with, you know, in week, I don't know what, week 4 now. I don't know what they're saying. He's iffy for week 1. And then just because he tore his ACL so late in the season, he tore it in week 11. With the reason why I picked him mostly for a sleeper pick was because Miller is just not fulfilling what Houston thought he would be. So with that, I could see them wanting to get the rookie from last year more involved and seeing, okay, well, Miller's not working out for us. Let's see what Foreman can do. And just giving him more of a leading back type of role. I really like the big running backs. They just ever since Earl Campbell and those type of guys, Jerome Bettis, I just always liked those type of players. And he's sort of like that. He's just a big bulldozer, 6 foot, 235 pound, and he has solid speed. So I think he might even be faster than Jerome Bettis.
That wouldn't be hard.
Yeah. You know, with Bettis, he wasn't so fast straight line like Dante Foreman is. Bettis just had really quick feet. I mean, he had like dancer feet. So I think that's what helped him out a lot. He avoided a lot of tackles. And then in his last year, he didn't disappoint really. He on 78 carries, he had 327 yards, and which translates into a 4.2 carry average and two touchdowns. Of course, one of those touchdowns, he went for like, I think 60 yards and he tore his ACL on. So, yeah, there you have it for Foreman.
Yeah. I kind of think that, Foreman's ACL has saved Lamar Miller for another year, and it's looking like he might go on PUP, but that could be a second half breakout for you, or second half sleeper candidate. Lamar Miller, I don't know what to think of Lamar Miller. His yards per carry has gone down each of the last 4 years as he's gotten his touch volume has gone up over, you know, like 230. But at the same time, flip side of the coin, he's averaged over or nearly 1,300 yards a season, which is pretty good. So it's sort of a give and take. He never got as high as the Texans hoped he would, or as everybody thought he would in his last couple years in Miami. He's sort of just a guy at this point. And I could see if in the second half of the season, the Texans are out of it for whatever reason. Let's say J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney unexpectedly hurt themselves for the 300th time in their career. I could see them going to Foreman to see what they have in him for the future. So that's a good call. And your bust, who I am going to guess who it is. I think I know who it is in my head, but I'll wait to see who you say it is.
Okay. And you're probably right. It's Lamar Miller.
What?
So
that's not who I was going to guess.
Oh, really? Who are you thinking?
You say your piece and then I'll talk about who I thought it was going to be.
Okay, not a problem. And it, you know, it just seems like Miami got it right the first time that he isn't a full-time back. Even though in Miami he averaged 4.6 per carry yards per carry as a part-timer, now he as a full-time, he's averaging 3.9 yards per carry, which you just can't have your running back averaging under 4 yards per carry. It just doesn't work. His touchdowns haven't really been a whole lot, just 12 total. And here's a guy who catches the ball out of the backfield. So he's only had 12 total touchdowns in the 2 years he's been with Miami. And last year, he didn't even have a 100-yard game. So for a full-time running back and you don't even have a 100-yard game, that's saying a whole lot. The thing that I see, maybe the silver lining, is that when Foreman does come back, he's going to probably be a split time. So maybe he will get better. Maybe he'll bounce that up to 4.6 or something like that. But I just don't see him after 2 years of getting this chance to be the runner that he just hasn't surpassed. So what's going to change now? And unless you can convince me what's going to make him change, then I don't see it.
All right, that's fair enough. My guy, who I was going to talk about, it's pretty clear. I mean, seems pretty clear to me that it's going to be Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson's the number two quarterback off the board by ADP. I mean, that's all I have to say.
And yeah, if you go by ADP, I can definitely say that Deshaun Watson, and for the life of me, I still can't figure out how he's the number two quarterback. I could list 4 quarterbacks off the top of my head I'd rather have over Deshaun Watson. So,
oh yeah, I pulled some numbers out for my sleeper breakout bust for the AFC South. His interception rate last year and his amazing run higher career rates than Mark Sanchez, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Derek Anderson. And he also scored touchdowns faster than any player in NFL history at a higher rate. His 614 rushing yards, if it had been a full season, would have been the most since Colin Kaepernick in 2014. And he's dealing with a torn ACL, recovering from that. So I don't think he will run that much anymore or be as efficient as a 7.5 yards per run last year, yards per carry. So that's why I thought it was going to be Watson. It's just QB2 is basically people hedging that he won't be as good as he was last year, but they're not really hedging. They're just paying lip service to the fact that they're saying that they're hedging.
Yeah. And that's the one thing that when I do the breakout busts and sleepers is I don't really look all that much out of ADP. Obviously, I look at more of the player per se. It's is this guy going to have a good year or is this guy going to have a bad year? And with someone like Lamar Miller, I see him as a bust just because people are going to draft him. And why would you want to draft someone that's going to be bust written all over? So I do agree with you on the ADP part about Deshaun Watson. He's absolutely would lead the bust list on ADP for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how I build my sleeper breakout and bust is I look at players that don't match their ADP because that's how you win the draft. You maximize the value of, you know, getting players later than you think they should and sidestepping landmines. I think sidestepping landmines is my number one thing that I try to do at the draft is I'm the guy to raise his hand and go, do you really think that, for example, last year I was like, do you really think Dez will do XYZ? You really think he's worth that draft stock? Everybody will tell me I'm stupid. I say, all right, fine, cool. 2 years ago, it was CJ Anderson. I went, hey, do you guys think he's worth the first round pick? Everybody says I'm stupid. I'm like, all right, cool, whatever you want. So, yep. So that's sort of my thing is I try to sidestep the landmines really hard in the draft because, like they say, you can't win your league at the draft, but you can certainly lose it. And if you fill your roster with landmines, it's going to be a lot harder to win your league. Not saying it can't be done, but it makes it harder on yourself. Amazing. So now that we finished up with the Houston Texans, we'll switch over to the NFC South. I'm going to go with the Atlanta Falcons, and I'm actually calling an audible here from my article that I wrote. Gosh, it was a couple weeks ago now. I'll start with the bounce back, and then I'll talk about my sleeper and my bust switching spots. My bounce back, it's pretty easy. It's Matt Ryan. He's QB14 this year. He's finished as a the last six seasons, he's been QB7, then QB14, then 7, then 19, then 2, then 15. So, I mean, it's pure math. He's going to finish as QB7 or better. That's easy. All done. It's pattern recognition. No. So his the reason his value, end of season value, just goes up and down so wildly is because he seems to be extremely tied to his touchdown rate. If you look at when he was QB19, his touchdowns, he threw a touchdown pass 3.4% of the time. And in his great 2016, that was up to 7.1. So he doubled his touchdown rate from the year before. Personally, I think he's going to get back around 5% touchdown rate. And that'll put him back as a top 10 quarterback pretty easily. Right now, or when I wrote this, he was going as the 14th quarterback off the board. So that was huge value right there. I'm just checking right now. As of right now, he is going in the 10th round. So that's if you want to wait on quarterback, that's a huge boon for you, a huge boost for your team is Matt Ryan. And he's the 13th quarterback off the board. So still great value there for Matt Ryan, a guy that I think just by pure regression, positive regression, will end up as a top 10 quarterback.
You know, the one thing that I'm worried about is he absolutely can be top five quarterback, but it just always seems like he's never a top 10 quarterback, which is very strange considering how many yards he throws every single season. I think he's always up there in the 4,000 yard mark. Do you see? So you think that his touchdowns are going to increase quite a bit for him to be in the top 10?
Well, I mean, he's been in the top 10 three of the last six seasons. He does do it, and it all has to do with his touchdown rate. For whatever reason, he cannot have it consistent from season to season, so his touchdowns just bounce around wildly, and that's what leads to his inconsistent end of year rankings.
Right, and I don't get how he can march the team down the field and then get in the red zone. I guess the field just shrinks up so much for him that he can't find Julio Jones in the end zone. But
well, I mean, Julio Jones only had three touchdowns last year. It was a play calling issue, I think, which they'll correct this season, I honestly believe. But I mean, you look at his touchdowns from starting in 2012, 32, 26, 28, which are all decent numbers of touchdowns. Then he gets down to 21, up to 38, and back down to 20. So it's, you can see it bouncing up and down, up and down. But his average in that span was 28. So I just think 28 to 30 is a good call for Matt Ryan this year. And it's something that he's done, you know, in half of his last six seasons, half of his last eight seasons, actually. He seems to go back and forth. So I think that they'll pull it off. I think Sarkisian will stop doing his hybrid of Shanahan's offense and his offense and just run what he wants to run, hopefully get the ball to Julio Jones or dump offs to Devonta Freeman, Tevin Coleman, or one of the other wide receivers. So speaking of the wide receivers, in my article, I wrote that I thought Mohamed Sanu was a sleeper because of what he did last season. And I thought that Calvin Ridley was going to be a bust because he was going as the 113th player off the board, wide receiver 44. Preseason showed me that that actually needs to be swapped. Mohamed Sanu has been relegated to the third wide receiver role in the preseason with Calvin Ridley being the number two target. He was probably the most NFL ready wide receiver, ready to plug and play. He being Calvin Ridley in the 2018 NFL draft. My big thing was that Mo Sanu was there to take all the targets. Calvin Ridley was going to have to play third fiddle in his first year, but I honestly think that he's already taken it over from Mo Sanu. Sanu is a wasted pick essentially at this point. There's no reason to have him. We've seen his upside. His upside's what, like wide receiver 30. If you're going to pick a player, go with Calvin Ridley. With Julio Jones around, he probably has a ceiling, let's say wide receiver 20, 25. But if Julio Jones were to go down, he could be easily a top 12 to 15 wide receiver. So that's me banging the last year's dust out of the room and bringing in the nice sunshine of the new hotness of Calvin Ridley. I think he's going to be a great player in this league, and I think he's going to hit the ground running because he already kind of has in preseason.
Yeah, you know, I'm really hoping you're right. I think Ridley has a ton of talent, and why not? If he's really showing it like he has been in the preseason, why not put him above Mohamed Sanu, who's been average at best? You might as well get the rookie in there and give your chance a better chance to win. That's going to give Ryan some more weapons too. So maybe you're onto something there.
Yeah. And it's just, when you're in this stage of the round, don't go for guys whose upside is like wide receiver 30 to 35, like Sanu's is, you know. If you can get Calvin Ridley around like 120, like the 10th round, if he sucks, he sucks. You cut him. It's no big deal. 10th round picks get cut all the time to make room for other players. So he's a better swing than Mo Sanu. So now that we have the Falcons in the books, I think it's time. Now we turn to the Indianapolis Colts, a team near and dear to your heart, et cetera, whatever I said before.
Yes, definitely near and dear to my heart. Unless they keep losing. God, no. I've been through it all, so yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, my breakout player is Andrew Luck, which might sound kind of surprising. But if you think about the fact that he had a complete wasted year last year, and then 2-3 years ago, or 2 years prior to this one, his season was marred by injury. I think he only played like 7 games. And so, yeah, he had a good 2016, but 2015 and 2017 were yikes. So I had to fit him in there somewhere too. So I couldn't put him as a bust, and he's definitely not a sleeper anymore.
Hey, I got a sleeper for you guys. One of the best quarterbacks to come out in the last decade.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And so, oh man, all the drafts that I got him in earlier this year, I'm just loving it because I got him like in the 10th round.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So anyways, enough for my lust on Andrew Luck. But the dude just can do it all. He throws deep accurately. He throws the intermediate and short accurately. He has the PPR bonus with his running. And he doesn't throw many interceptions. He's really, I think, only like three touchdowns away from having a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, which is
really,
yeah. So, we know how hard that is to do, but,
yes, but what?
Yeah, exactly.
Hot diggity. Okay.
Yeah. You're that's right, how good yeah. he is.
Cause when I think of Andrew Luck, I think of a lot of the arm punts they have him doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and just the really boneheaded. I mean, if he didn't throw boneheaded interceptions, he would definitely be well above the 2-to-1 passing touchdown passing ratio.
Yeah, he hero balls it a little bit.
Yeah, and then he'll be being brought down, and he'll just chuck it, and you're like, "What are you doing with this, Andrew? What are you doing?" It drives me crazy. But anyways, so yeah, he does have a lot less interceptions than actually I thought he did too. So the number one thing that I really like is he's coming in with fresh legs and no sign of arm issues, which is just a double bonus because here you got a guy who is coming off, you know, shoulder problems and everything else he missed last year and all that kind of stuff. And he looks like Andrew Luck, and which is what you want. Besides 2015 and 17, those injuries, 3 out of 4 seasons he threw for 4,000 yards and 103 total touchdowns. So, yeah, you're gonna. That's basically 30 plus touchdowns a year on top of the 4,000 yards. So you're looking easily at a top 3 to top 5, even number one quarterback in some of the seasons. Luck is an intelligent player. He reads defenses, knows how to deliver the ball. My one true concern is how well he'll hold up, and how is he going to be used? Is he going to be used like a player coming off who missed a season and they're going to run the ball more? Or is how well is he going to hold up? Is that arm after so many passes going to start deteriorating and showing issues? So those are really the kind of two things I'm worried about. I'm worried about early season to see if they're just going to go to the ground a lot. And I'm also worried about as the season progresses, how his arm's going to hold up. Other than that, I'm actually willing to take the chance on him being 4th, 5th quarterback off the board.
Yeah. That's to mention, you know, what he's done before. I started out, well, actually, technically, Pro Football Reference started out for him. Every 16 games, he's averaged 4,361 yards, 30 scores, and 16 picks. That would have been good enough for QB7 last year, and that includes all that he's been playing hurt and everything. I think he won't break down because the Colts were extraordinarily careful with him. So I think he's going to be as healthy as he's ever been, to be honest. So, all right, so who's your next guy you want to talk about?
So my bust is Marlon Mack.
Me too. And
yeah, it's difficult for Marlon Mack just because how do you say a bust as going as the 40th back in PPR leagues, right? So It's not even a standard he's going in 40th. He's going to 40th as in PPR leagues. So that said, I can't go with Luck or Hilton as a bust. So basically, he was the only one really available for this situation. But I still think he's going to be a bust regardless. He just for the reason that he might not even be the best third down back on the team with Naheem Hines. And I could see Hines sort of taking over Mac's role, especially if Mac doesn't progress the way he should. He also will have to battle with Jordan Wilkins and Robert Turbin when he comes back.
It's so messy. It's such a mess in that backfield.
It is. You got 3 or 4 players that 3 or 4 running backs that can just carry the ball whenever suits the situation right. If things remain the same, max carry volume. So if you're thinking about last year and if things remain the same, that means he's only going to be carrying the ball 11 times or less. So that he didn't even get the ball last year.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, just I agree. It's ridiculous. Top 100 picks being used on him, and there's him, Robert Turbin, Nyheim Hines, Jordan Wilkins, and Christine Michael on that backfield.
Yep.
It's a freaking disaster. Plus, about 4 or 5 days ago, Waleed hops into the Football Absurdity group chat that we have for, you know, putting articles together, stuff like that. He goes, he's like, hey, Jeff, can you watch Marlon Mack? There is something about him I do not like the way he runs. So I'm like, okay, I've never looked specifically at the way that Mack runs, you know, because I was, to be honest with you, I haven't watched too many Colts games. And it's a lot easier to watch a pattern of how a player runs when you do it on Game Pass cutups. Not sponsored by NFL Game Pass, like unlike every other podcast out there. But so I popped up NFL Game Pass and I watched him. That guy, his legs, they just flail around. There's no like rhyme or reason to the way he runs. I told him, I said, hey, it looks, he runs like he's the freaking Lord of the Dance. Like he's Michael Flatley.
Which reminds me of Friends, and I think it was Chandler.
That's actually what I sent into the group chat was that the YouTube clip of, you know, he as if his legs are independent from his body. Yeah, that's exactly what I sent into the group chat was that I was like, oh, I figured it out. He's Lord of the Dance. His legs seem to be independent from his body. So, I mean, I don't know. That's the type of thing that invites hits, and I'm not a fan of Marlon Mack either, so I like that call.
Oh, thank you. And he's a small dude. And the one major negative that's been said a lot is this was from his college days too, is that he's just not carrying the ball inside the tackles. He just wants to bounce that out and go for the home run every single time. And you can't have an NFL back just always wanting to bounce it around the tackles, because you're just going to end up losing yards time after time again, especially if they see him in the backfield and they know that he's going to try to bounce it outside. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They're going to lose 2 or 3 yards. So with the little volume, the fact that he refuses to run inside, and the fact that they don't even use him, even if there is little room to use him, are all spells disaster to me.
Yes, sir. All right. So who is your sleeper for the team?
My sleeper is Ryan Grant. And
oh, nice.
I really like this dude an awful lot. I think that the last few seasons, you know, he became Jay Gruden's go-to guy, really. But they released him, and then he went, interesting enough, he had sort of a little march towards the Colts. He was actually signed by the Ravens in March, but he failed his physical. Mm-hmm. And then 5 days later, he was signed by the Colts.
His mystery physical that he failed when Michael Crabtree became available.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, so he fails a physical, and then five days later, he's signed by the Colts. That sounds very odd.
Yeah, little head scratcher.
Yeah, so the Colts signed him for 1 year, $5 million, which I like because, A, it gives him proof to prove himself. B, if he's doesn't prove himself, then he's off the roster. So he has a lot to prove. And I think that the way that Gruden has talked about him, it seems like he's the type of guy that would do this, would do prove himself. And what I'm speaking of Gruden is that Gruden called him Mr. Consistent and just gushed all over him. I mean, I read this and he just was talked about how great he was, how smart he was. All these great things about how great he was in the locker room. And then the other things that I like about Grant is that great route runner, very good quickness off the line, reliable, strong hands, can bring down the contested ball in traffic. And you can put him anywhere, X, Y, Z, wherever you need to go, he'll go. One thing that really stood out to me was if you're third down, you want to find Grant. His 68% career catches have gone for a first down. So this guy knows where that line is. And that's very important. As you can see, so many receivers will cut it short and get 7 of the 8 yards. And guess what? Now you have to punt the ball.
Yeah.
So negatives, athletic, but he struggles to block, is smart, and good to have in the locker room, but he just that athletic ability and the struggling to block are kind of why he isn't on the field all the time. But I'll take him. I mean, anytime you have a really solid dude who does, you know, is considered Mr. Consistent, that's something you want, especially on the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, Dante Moncrief for years got drafted just by being a receiver on the Colts. Like, that was his only skill set.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
So awesome. Yeah, Ryan Grant's a good call. He's been getting some pop, some buzz in some circles. I had Eric Ebron, but I'm starting to fall off that hype train just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't see I mean, they're definitely going to use two tight ends, but one is going to be the Dwayne what was it? Washington Williams, whatever his name is. Dwayne Allen, thank you. And the other guy's going to be Kobe Flanner. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that puts it, anything else you want to gush about the Colts? How do you think they're going to do this year? They are your team after all. Capital Y, capital T.
I think that they're going to be 8-8, 9-7. I mean, I really wish I could say more, but it's just hard to put it in context, especially with their defense just being really as bad as it's been over the last few years. You just can't really be a 10-6 team when your defense is as bad as it is.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think their defense will kind of hold them back this year. But luckily, it seems, as an outside observer, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems from the outside they finally decided, oh, we lost Andrew Luck for a whole season. We should probably do something to protect him.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan Kelly, and then I can't remember the guy's name from Notre Dame off the top of my head, but yeah, they really have done beefed up that offensive line pretty well, and that's going to help an awful lot.
Yeah, Quentin Nelson, right?
That's Quentin Nelson.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, saw a lot of Quentin Nelson because I his running mate McGlinchey ended up on the Niners. So when the Niners drafted him, I went and watched a bunch of his tape. So I watched a lot of Quentin Nelson indirectly.
Gotcha. Yep, that would make
sense. He's very good, Mr. Quentin Nelson. So you guys got a good one there. So
thank you.
All right, from one team that bolstered the offensive line to a team whose offensive line can't stop getting hurt. Carolina Panthers. I was watching the Panthers Patriots game before we recorded today while I was finishing up my articles, and their entire offensive line is just falling apart, and then their backup right tackle, non-contact leg injury. Not sure what it is, but it's never good when nobody rolls up on it, nobody hits you. You're just sort of running forward, and then you come up limping. That's never a good sign. Yeah, that's not great. But other than that, things are going great there. First and foremost, I'm not going to talk about Christian McCaffrey. I think he will take a step forward, but I think he's being drafted appropriately at his ADP. If he was going 7, 8, 9, you know, if he was going as like running back 20, I think that would be their breakout candidate. But, yeah. As it is, I'm going with a bounce back. I'm going with Cam. Cam's going as QB6, so it's not a huge thing, but I honestly think he's going to be the number two quarterback this year. I just think he offers too much floor with his rushing and with his rushing touchdowns specifically. And then he adds on quarterback stats on top of it. One thing that I put together for the article is for quarterbacks who are still playing in 2018, since 2011, he has the number 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, and 10 quarterback rushing seasons, and the most quarterback rushing touchdowns since he entered the league. Just to put it in perspective, his average rushing season is 617 yards and 7.7 touchdowns. That's ridiculous. That is equivalent to, I found the closest campaign I could find, 2014 Isaiah Crowell, a guy tasked with running the ball exclusively, 607 yards and 8 scores. And his 6.7 fantasy stats per game he gets with his legs is the equivalent of tacking on last year's LeGarrette Blount stats to his quarterback stats. So I see QB6 kind of as his floor because of the rushing and everything. And I think he does have the best set of weapons that he's had in a while since he stopped having Steve Smith. so for the last few seasons, and I think he'll bounce back. He's not a breakout or anything. He's a bounce back player. I honestly think he'll be the second quarterback. I know all the things with Cam's inaccuracy and all that stuff. That doesn't bother me. I think it's more than offset by the weaponry around him and his rushing ability.
Gotcha. And the one thing that worries me though is his intermediate passing, but I think that's going to get better. I think that after a year of working that out and then having this second year, I think definitely it's going to benefit him quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Cam sort of does what's asked of him. And I think that with the weaponry he had around him before, it was more deep shots. Because like the big knock on Christian McCaffrey going into last year is people saying, well, Cam doesn't throw to the running back. Cam doesn't throw to the running back. Well, he had D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart, neither of which are passing or receiving backs.
Exactly.
So Cam's like, okay, you want me to pass the running back? Guess what? I'll pass to the running back. Like, it's fine. So I think that you're right, but I also think Cam's the sort of guy that's like, all right, you want me to do this? I'll do this. You know, I'll do whatever you ask of me. So that's, I think he's due for a big bounce back campaign this year. One of the reasons I think of his bounce back campaign is their first round pick this year, DJ Moore. I think he's a big sleeper on this team. I like DJ Moore. A lot of this has to do with, I think that DJ Moore is going to take over a lot of the targets that they had to send Devin Funchess' way last season, just sort of out of necessity. I think that he will do a lot more with those touches than Funchess did last year, mostly because he's a much better player. Yeah. He already has some flashy highlights in the preseason, namely week one, where he sort of danced around and made everybody miss. The one thing I do worry about with him is when it gets close, he's behind Greg Olsen. He's behind Christian McCaffrey. He's behind Cam Newton. He's behind CJ Anderson. And he's even behind Devin Funchess in terms of touchdown upside there. But I do think at PPR, I wouldn't be surprised if we turned around and he has 80 and 1100 or, somewhere in that ballpark at the end of the season, but he'll probably only have 5 or 6 touchdowns. But that has value. I mean, he's going as the number 46 wide receiver off the board. So he's one of those dart throws you can throw towards the end of your draft.
Do you think Devin Funchess is dead basically now with DJ Moore?
Oh yeah. I don't think Devin Funchess is very good at all. And I looked at a wonderful website run by Josh Hermsmeyer, airyards.com. He takes NFL Next Gen stats and kind of charts them out. And I looked at 4 different things for Devin Funchess is my bust. So I like that question. I looked at 4 different statistics on airyards.com. Yards after catch, the RACR, which is basically the efficiency of his catches. That includes catch percentage, yards after catch, and depth of target, sort of all put in together. Basically, if the pass was thrown at every wide receiver in the league, what would you expect to happen from the depth of target based off of average yards per catch and or yards after the catch and catch rate? I also looked at his target distribution and his regular catch rate. He's below average at everything. He's below average at yards after catch, except he spikes when he gets a target 21 yards down the field, but he's well below average there. He's inefficient, except for, again, the ball he catches after 20 air yards. There's sort of one pass that spikes everything up. So he had one good play that's spiking all this stuff up. His target distribution, he doesn't even get deep ball passes that he's good at. Most of his catches are 10 yards or less, which he can't catch very well. He's below average at a catch rate everywhere, but at 20 yards again and 2 to 3 yards. So he's good at catching short passes, which is kind of surprising given Cam Newton's issues with the short passes, but he's bad at everything. Like there's not a single thing that he's above average at. So I'm staying away from Devin Funchess. He's the number 32 wide receiver off the board. So in a 3 wide receiver league, he's starting for somebody, or he's a flex in other leagues. There's just not anything I see. I just don't get it at all.
Yeah. And he had that gross that spurt last year where everybody's like, oh my God, Funches is doing what we all thought he would do. And fell right off the cliff. And
oh yeah. He's just a big body. He'll catch touchdowns. He's a big body. So he'll have some value, but I just don't want to take him as my third wide receiver.
Neither would I. Yeah. No.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my run up of the Carolina Panthers. So let's move on back to the AFC South, and we will now go to HIJ, Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars, double J, and
from JJ Watt,
or
the team.
Yeah,
from the Texans to the Jags.
To the Jags. Now, or you got TJ Watt.
No,
that wouldn't work.
No, TJ Watt. No. So, all right, let's talk about Jags. Let's talk about Blake Bortles. Let's talk about Leonard Fournette, Lenny Fournette.
Yeah, we definitely have Fournette in there somewhere, but he's not my breakout. D.D. Westbrook is my breakout.
All right,
and I'll tell you why. Because he missed the first 9 games, and which obviously didn't help him or his statistics, not that much anyways. And but when he did, when he got back on, or not back on the field, but back on the field as a rookie, he caught 4 balls on 7 targets. So he pretty much averaged 4 catches a game. And obviously he was targeted quite a bit, nearly half 7 targets per game. So he's good for PPR. He has solid hands, sub 4.4 speed, and after the catch, just look out because he's just going to take it and just go. The problems, of course, is that the Jaguars are not so much of a top-notch offense, especially in the air. The fact that they're going to get it close, you know, they're going to go with Leonard Fournette down in the goal line, so they're not going to throw it all that much. So those are the kind of things that are going to hurt him. Also, he has Blake Bortles as a quarterback, but as I was saying, getting 7 targets and catching, you know, half that, you're looking still quite a good volume amount. He also isn't the best situations playing in a running offense, and then several viable receivers are all battling for ops. So you got so many receivers out there that are just battling for the volume, and it's just going to get fractured. But
yeah, everybody has their own favorite. It feels like there's the D.D. Westbrook stands. There's the Keelan Cole guys. There's the Marquise Lee diehards. You know, everybody has their own flavor of that receiving core.
Yeah, and Moncrief, and yeah, you name
it. Oh yeah, I forgot Dante, the Dante Moncrief guys too.
Yeah, so I guess I'm a Westbrook guy. So
yeah, the Dante Moncrief guys are the never nudes of the Jags receiving core. You know, there's dozens of them. Dozens.
Yeah. They're like Dante Moncrief. I know that dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so. I just think he's the PPR guy on this team. You're not going to want him for standard, but definitely if you're looking at PPR, I think he's your guy.
All right. Fair enough. All right. So where do you want to go next with the Jags?
We'll go sleeper.
All right.
And I'm going Blake Bortles as my sleeper pick.
Yeah, baby.
And I like him this year. I don't know why. For the first 3 years he's been in the league, I haven't liked him, but this year I do. And so what my question was, can a quarterback who's virtually been a bust most of his career be a sleeper? And I say yes. And a couple reasons. He took the Jags to the AFC Championship game and kept them in the game. And a lot of people think, including myself, think they got a little cheated out of that championship game. A couple really bad calls. I hate to say referees cost them the game, but there was a couple bad calls in that game that really shouldn't have gone their way. So whatever, take it as what you want to take it. And then interesting enough, he threw for 3,687 yards, which was 11th in the league, which what absolutely killed him though was his 21 touchdowns. And for some reason, I definitely see you're going to see an regression going up. Now, how far that's going to go up, I don't know. He's shown that he can throw 35 touchdowns and 4,428 yards as he did in his rookie season. So if he threw 35 touchdowns once, he can definitely do it again. I doubt it just because it's a ground game, but the potential is there. One other thing, if you're in a PPR league, guess what? He's got those legs. He's going to run the ball. He ran last year for 322 yards and added two touchdowns. And he's a dude that stays healthy. He's played and started all 64 games of his career. So you're not going to really have to worry about someone that is going to get injured on the field. So when you wrap all that up, you're looking at someone who's getting one of the last picks of the draft, if at all. But you're getting a guy with BPR bonus, someone who's going to be, you know, 10th or 11th in the league in yards, passing yards. And then you're also going to get someone who's going to regress, maybe up to 26 touchdowns, maybe a little more, who knows. But I wouldn't look at the 21 touchdowns as anything.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I had Blake Bortles as my breakout, I guess, different or bounce back different category. I mean, he is the poster child for you don't need to be a good real life quarterback to be a good fantasy quarterback, because he hasn't finished, except for his rookie season, he hasn't finished outside the top 14. And on a week to week basis, he has finished 43.75% of his games as a QB1, QB1 through 12. That's just alongside Carson Wentz, 2% different from Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, and Matt Ryan in the same span. So he's turning in at the same rate QB1 games. So I like that pick there.
Thank you. And now my bust. And that is going to go to Leonard Fournette.
Me too.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to hear your reasons why. So let's see how well we match up with our reasons. And, you know, the dude has lost some weight, which is good, I think. But when you're looking at where he's getting drafted at, and when you match that with his durability concerns, this isn't just last year, but he's had injuries throughout his college as well. And they're not like a broken finger. They're foot and ankle and toes. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff that he relies on. I mean, every runner, of course, relies on those things. But for him, it's even more important, because he uses those to dive and dodge first tackle defense. And it gets him a chance to get downfield. If he can't move out of the way of that first attacker, he can't get that speed to go up or go downhill, and that's going to be a major concern for him. He isn't going to press defenses with his receiving ability. He can catch, he can get the job done, but he's not going to run wheel routes out there. He's the type of player that's going to have to sit there, stand there, and catch the ball. Basically, stick. He's just going to run, turn around, and then if Fournette sees him, or I mean, not Fournette. Where did I get Fournette from?
Because you're talking about Fournette.
Yeah, I guess. Bortles is going to get him.
Bortles can find him.
Yeah, exactly. And the good news is that he's a heavy-duty running back. The bad news is that he's a heavy-duty running back who has a history of injuries, and that's why he's my bust.
Yeah, he was my bust too. Just because, like you said, his lower body injuries in the last 2 years, ankle, knee, foot, ankle again, and then his quad. And that's going back to college. And those are the types of things that sort of stack and cascade. They don't, like you said, it's not like David Johnson's broken hand. Like, that's not going to affect anything about his running or at all. He might be a little iffy if he takes a hit in it, but that's it. Whereas Fournette's injuries are the sort of things that linger and stick around for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So going from the AFC South back to the NFC South, we have my next team, which I'm stalling because I'm trying to get back to the document. That would be the New Orleans Saints. So the Saints have their passing offense took a huge step back last season. That was because, like we've talked about a bunch of times, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara were just incredibly, incredibly efficient last year. So what I think is going to happen is, with Mark Ingram suspended, they will turn back to Drew Brees. Pretty good fallback plan. They'll turn to him in the first four games of the season. And then, as we'll see as we talk about this, probably for the rest of the season. My sleeper, I actually kind of have two. And it's whoever you want to do. In PPR, I would go with Tre'Quan Smith. He's killing it out there with the ones in preseason. He's just doing work. He's a third-round pick. Kind of a just a target hog. Probably taking over what Cam Meredith was supposed to be doing. It'll be a little difficult for him to find consistent production if Michael Thomas stays upright, just because Michael Thomas sort of defines target hog in the Saints offense. The guy that I think is not getting enough love. So, Mike, there have been 19 wide receivers to have at least 700 yards in each of the last three seasons. Okay.
Okay.
Only four of them have been able to do it with two different teams. So they were in one city, pulled off a great feat, 700 yards, nothing to sneeze at, went to a completely different team, and they were able to do it again. Those are Marvin Jones. He did it with Cincy in Detroit, Alshon Jeffrey with Chicago and Philly, Brandon Cooks with New Orleans and New England, and then this year he'll do it again with the Rams. But the fourth guy is Ted Ginn.
Wow.
Ted Ginn's actually pulled it off with two different teams, and he did it in two completely different ways. With Cam, he was just the deep threat. Just go long. You know, you catch 10 of those 10 70 yard bombs a year and you're at 700 yards. But with the Saints, he had some of those deep bombs, but he had nice, efficient routes. He was far more efficient of a receiver. He caught 70% of his balls last year, which is incredible. And, but he also had the fewest air yards, which means that Drew Brees was throwing it to him short, let him catch, and then let him run after the catch, which are far more efficient routes than the, you know, than running the nine and having Cam Newton huck it up to you. So he is going as wide receiver 69, ADP at 193. He's not a guy you have to draft, but he is a guy that is basically a shoo-in to be much better than that wide receiver 69. That's sort of how I looked at it. Was it's a guy going late who has the best chance of just drastically outproducing his ADP. That's how I looked at it. So him going for 700 yards for two different teams in each of the last three seasons. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and that's totally surprising, but also that kind of really makes sense. It seems like it's a Ted Ginn thing, you know, where this guy was drafted in the first round by Miami,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was just like, what are you doing? He sucks. And, of course, he didn't last very long in Miami because he sucks, and it's bounced around to every single team, you know, known to man. And then, but he's kept his career alive and he's just done great things. Obviously he's not the greatest player and probably doesn't deserve to have been drafted in the first round, but he does things on the football field that keep him alive. And that's all you can really ask for.
That's true. Like I said, he's probably a guy that won't end up on any of my teams at any point during the season, but he's also a huge, candidate to greatly exceed his average draft position. So my breakout slash bounce back, not really a breakout. It's hard to say that a guy who's a shoe-in first ballot Hall of Famer is a breakout, but he will bounce back. That would be Drew Brees. Last season, it just comes down to he just had a ridiculously low number of touchdowns. He set the record for completions percentage last year. He played one of the best quarterback seasons in a long time, but statistically it didn't show, because what he was doing was a lot of pre-snap stuff, a lot of getting the ball to the right place where it needed to go, whether that was in Alvin Kamara's belly or Mark Ingram's belly. He was just putting the whole team in a position to succeed, and that didn't really reflect in his statistics, but I think that will this year, because I think they're going to turn back to the passing game. Last year, a big part of his downturn were those touchdowns, like I said, and that's because the a 1-2 punch of Kamara and Ingram passed for more yards than any Saints duo in over a decade. And their 20 rushing touchdowns were twice as many as any other Saints running back duo has had with Drew Brees there. So it was just a huge outlier season that I think will come back into the fold. One of the reasons I think it'll come back into the fold is because of my bust, Mark Ingram. Now, Ingram suspended for the first four games of the season for PEDs. And I have no statistics to back anything up. This is 100% anecdotal evidence, but I'm connecting dots here. A couple of seasons ago, Mark Ingram was putting the ball on the ground, and Sean Payton pulled Tim Hightower from Foot Locker. Whatever Tim Hightower was doing, he was out of the league. He pulled him out, and he started him over Mark Ingram to prove a point. The point was that Mark Ingram, no matter how talented you are one step outside of Sean Payton's doghouse. It seems like they've been trying to replace Mark Ingram as their feature back for years. They traded up to get Alvin Kamara last year, and now he gets popped with this PED suspension. Great. So you have a player who's on Sean Payton's doghouse's doorstep, gets a four-game PED suspension, and we saw last year what happened to Willie Snead. He never made it back out of the doghouse. So anecdotally, I'm seeing a player in Mark Ingram that is going to be completely backburnered in the Saints offense this year, which means more passing, which means Drew Brees bounces back, which means everything sort of goes back to what you would expect to see out of the Saints passing game that you're used to with Drew Brees.
And just his like 24 touchdowns, you know that if he throws another 24 touchdowns, he might as well retire. And I don't see him retiring after this end of the season. So it's definitely regression upside coming in a big way.
Yeah, exactly. Some nice positive regression.
Which I still don't know how you can have positive regression, but.
All right. So all, so all regression is, here's, this will be Jeff's statistics corner. So all regression is returning to the mean or what you expect. In sports, it's a player's sort of standard performance. If you have a batter who's in baseball, who's, you know, hitting 200 and he's a 300 career hitter, he will have regression back to that 300. Regression is agnostic to direction. It doesn't, everybody uses it as getting worse, but it's actually, it's just going back to average for that player. It's agnostic to direction. So that's how you have positive regression.
Gotcha. Okay. I didn't know it was agnostic to
this direction.
Yeah.
Come for the football, stay for the basic, the sabermetrics class I took 3 or 4 years ago.
That was a bit fun. I'll take that.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. But that's when I realized, I was like, oh yeah, huh? Regression. It's just getting back to average. It cares not which direction it's going. So all right, let's wrap up the AFC South with the Tennessee Titans, the Titoons, as the Around the NFL podcast calls them. So who is your sleeper?
My sleeper is Marcus Mariota. So another quarterback late in the draft that I think is going to impress. And again, he led the Titans to the playoffs, They upset the Kansas City Chiefs in the wild card game there, really basically on what he did on the field. He's a multi-talented, another guy that's going to add PPR bonus with his legs. He scored 5 touchdowns last season and ran for 312 yards. I like the fact that he can deliver through the air. He had 2 300-yard games and garnered 3,232 yards passing. Of course, I'd like to see that go up by at least 400 yards, if not 800, but I don't think regression is going to put him that far up. He's going to have a full season. Hopefully, cross fingers with Corey Davis. Hopefully, that guy doesn't get hurt again. And then they also added Deion Lewis, who is actually a better pass catcher than DeMarco Murray out of the backfield. And then, of course, you also have the other weapons, Delanie Walker, Rishard Matthews. And I just really think this offense is going to look pretty solid as long as Corey Davis stays healthy. So that could be a big if. And I think that 13 touchdowns, what he threw last season, is just awful, but that's going to go up. I could see that even going up to upwards in the mid-20s, even though that sounds like, you know, he's going to have to double his touchdowns. But when you think of doubling 13 touchdowns – in the NFL that's going to be passing the ball quite a bit. I think that the Titans definitely have a better chance of throwing through the air and scoring through the air than, say, the Jaguars, because they're more of a passing offense than they are a running offense.
If you think that touchdown number is crazy, let me know when you're done talking about Marcus Mariota and all.
I'll
blow your mind a little bit.
Go ahead.
All right. So I just did this today, like I always said at the top. I finished out my AFC South. I think you're way wrong on Marcus Mariota. He's not a sleeper. He's a breakout.
Oh, okay.
He was my breakout for the team. So what I did was I looked at last season, because they ditched Exotic Smash Mouth. They got Matt LaFleur. They're going to pass the ball more. He threw the ball, or the Titans threw the ball, the fifth fewest times in the league last year. It was in the high 400s. So I said, all right, let's look at if he throws the ball just a league average number of times. So, the 16-17 teams hovered around 550 yards. So what are 550 pass attempts? So what I did was I took his rookie and sophomore years where he was much more efficient. Last year, he just cratered. He fell apart.
Yeah.
So I took his rookie and sophomore year, and all I did was I scaled up to 550 pass attempts. I kept his touchdown rate for those years, his interception rate, and his yards per target, or yards per pass. That comes out to 4,180 yards passing, 12 interceptions, and 30 touchdowns. That's merely taking the Marcus Mariota from the first 2 years of his career and scaling him up to 550 pass attempts.
Wow.
So mid-20s isn't crazy. Like I said, that you think mid-20s is a little high? Sheer numbers get him to 30.
Wow.
Yeah, and you toss in his rushing yards, and he's averaged 3 scores a season. That gives him 19.5 fantasy points per game, putting him squarely between Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton last year.
Dang.
And he's basically free. So I am 100% on board with you with the Marcus Mariota bandwagon.
That's good. I like that. I like when we can agree. And I think that Deion Lewis is going to make a big impression. He's going to get those touchdowns that, say, DeMarco Murray couldn't get.
Yeah, he'll be a receiving back that'll definitely help out Mariota a lot.
And then for my bust, it's a guy I've never liked ever since he came in the league. Always thought that he was just too slow to play in the NFL, and that's Derrick Henry. And
me too.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Because wow. So. I was like, okay, what are they going to do when they release DeMarco Murray? Not even blink of eye. They're like, no, we can't have Derrick Henry carry the ball all the time. We can't rely on him. Let's sign Deion Lewis. So, boom, they get Deion Lewis. And even though Deion Lewis is not much of a ball carrier, he's going to steal opportunities away from Henry. There's just no doubt about that. Also, the fact that Henry is not someone who's going to be catching the ball. That definitely puts him off the field while Lewis is on the field during the third down rolls and doing that and being the playmaker that Deion Lewis was last year. The big question mark is what if Deion Lewis gets hurt, but whatever. I just can't rely on people getting injured. I don't subscribe to that theory. Either you're going to play or you're not. What may save Henry, and I was kind of impressed by this, I have to admit, that he's averaged 4.2 and 4.5 yards per carry over this last two seasons, but he's only rushed 276 times in that span as well, which is good and bad. The good part about it, of course, is the fact that he's up in those big time areas of yards per carry. The bad news is, okay, what if he's rushing 325 and those kind of things, you know, is his yards per carry going to go down? We just don't know. He has very good straight line speed, A to B. He's very quick, but outside of that, he's like a bowling ball on an ungreased bowling alley. He's just not going to go anywhere. And it's going to be interesting, but Derrick Henry is definitely never going to touch one of my teams.
Yep. And all right. he's my bust too. So you talked about his yards per carry. On his career, 4.3 yards per carry. Now, yards per carry isn't everything. Look back at his game log. There was two runs he had. One against the, I believe it was the Colts. One against the Seahawks. There was a 72-yard touchdown run and a 75-yard touchdown run. Both of these happened in games that were, they were salting the game away. Titans were going to win. They were running the ball to run out the clock. Defense was napping. And Derrick Henry went at full speed and scored touchdowns. So I did a little thought experiment. I said, what if Derrick Henry had gone down at the 3-yard line? You know, he went down because they were running out the clock. What if they knelt the ball instead, or did a quarterback kneel instead of running it? Or what if it was DeMarco Murray out there? So I took those two carries, 147 yards, which, by the way, is just under 12% of his career yardage in those two carries. I took those out, and he went from 4.3 yards per carry to 3.8 yards per carry. Yeah. So that tells you, you know, maybe his top line stats, little questionable. And like you said, he has great straight line speed, but he's got to get up. He's got to get up to speed. It's hard. He has, he's hard at changing directions. He kind of just picks a direction and goes as best he can. So I'm with you there on Derrick Henry. So who is your Titans breakout or bounce back player?
Do you want to take a guess?
Is he a breakout or is he a bounce back?
He's both kind of.
Is it Corey?
It is Corey Davis.
It is Corey Davis. Okay. Corey Davis didn't make my thing just because of my definitions. So tell me, sing me the song of Corey Davis.
So the reason why he's a breakout is because, and a bounce back is because of his injury last year. That pretty much just sucked the whole season out of him. But he came on late after that injured hamstring that missed five games. And being a rookie, five games doesn't sound a lot, but when you're considering getting used to the NFL and getting up to game speed and doing all the other things that normal veteran players can sort of do, bounce back more quickly, it's doubly hard for a rookie. So, yeah, he missed five games, but it's probably more like 10. In week 16, he caught six passes for 91 yards. And where he really showed that I really liked him, and it's only one game, but just what he does on the field tells me it's more than one game. And basically went supersonic on the Patriots and caught five passes for 63 yards and two touchdowns. And he just ate the Patriots up. I mean, it was just watching this guy. You have to go back and watch those plays, because you're going to see Randy Moss standing there. And so I looked at his height and weight, and Corey Davis, 6'3", 209 pounds. And guess what Randy Moss is? 6'4", 210 pounds.
Oh, jeez.
So, Davis just does everything Moss does. Enormous threat in the passing game, supreme leaping ability, tremendous catch radius, just a total freak. I call him Junior Freak. And even though Mariota may not be a solid quarterback, maybe, you know, if he regresses back to what he was last year, which I don't think he's going to do, Davis is the type of guy that will overcome any inefficiencies that Mariota carries. And with that said, that's why I have 100% belief in Corey Davis going to break out this year and bounce back due to that injury.
Yeah, breakout and bounce back all sort of all in one because of his expectations last year.
Yeah.
All righty. So that wraps up the AFC South for you. You're done previewing teams. Now you just get to kick back and relax. How's that feel?
Yeah, I like it. I think what I've come up with is I want to do this next year for all the players. So
good luck. all 32 teams, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did it. It's not fun. let me put it this way. You say that now and then just wait until you're trying to find you know, a sleeper candidate on a team that has nobody of value. Good luck to you.
Yeah.
So anyways, a team that does have some value, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. My breakout, we talked about him before, Jameis Winston. He kind of broke out last season, but it was cut short by a bunch of injuries. Just a quick reminder what I said before. In games that he was able to throw the ball at least 20 times, so he wasn't hurt, he didn't leave early, he didn't miss the game. He averaged 307 passing yards, 1.73 touchdowns, and a pick a game. That would have been about 20 fantasy points per game last year, which was tremendous. So he's a value right now because he's missing the first quarter of the season. So he's not a guy you have to draft. Pick him up after the first few weeks. He does have a bye week shortly after he comes back. He plays a game and then he's on a bye, and then he can start for you the rest of the way. But just keep Jameis in mind. He's a quarterback 21 right now. ADP of 154. That's a huge steal. If you want to snag two guys like a Tyrod Taylor and a Jameis, because Tyrod's going to lose his job to Baker Mayfield sometime during the year, it's probably the perfect combo for you. He'll be great. Tyrod Taylor would be great the first half of the year, and then Jameis will take you the rest of the way. You can ride him home.
I like that.
Yeah, not bad. So that's just extracting value out of him being out, and that's being cognizant of roster construction and roster management. So just keep that in mind. My sleeper is a guy that is running with Mike Evans. He's pushed DeSean Jackson to the bench, to the third wide receiver in sets, to the second string. That's Chris Godwin. He was a huge breakout candidate going into last year, into his rookie year. He didn't get a lot of opportunity, but the games that he did have opportunity, the games he had more than three targets, he averaged five receptions for 86 yards, and he scored once in those four games. That was good for 10 fantasy points per game in standard, 15 in PPR. If he'd done that all year, he would have been a top 10 wide receiver. He's not going to keep up that efficiency, but that's sort of what we're working with here on talent level with Chris Godwin. And literally, as we're speaking right now during the podcast, I saw on Twitter he scored a touchdown in his preseason game. So he's flying up draft boards. But when I put this together, he was the 71st wide receiver off the board.
Wow. Well, so, not anymore, I guess.
Yeah. So my bust, it's Ronald Jones, because for whatever reason, his transition into the NFL is not going as planned. Going into the third preseason game, he's averaged like 1 yard per carry. He's dropped one of his two targets. He just hasn't been good, and the Buccaneers seemed bent on running Peyton Barber out there as the starter. So when I wrote this, Ronald Jones is going as the 24th running back off the board. Given his situation, he's probably better suited around 32, 33, 34, just that he's not going to start the season doing much, and he may never do anything as rookie, or it may be a lost year. I personally like the player, but his college tape, but he's transitioning very poorly into the NFL, and going, you know, even as a running back three might not be a great decision for him, because it will probably take a Peyton Barber injury, or the Peyton Barber returning to being Peyton Barber, for him to have any sort of value this year.
Now, with that said, what do you do? I mean, do you go with Peyton Barber, and what about Jacquizz Rodgers? Obviously he had a chance and blew it, but yeah, I mean, who's going to be the guy there?
I would go with Peyton Barber. They're giving him every chance to get the starting role. I think Jacquizz won't do much except for being a change of pace back. I think it'll either be Peyton Barber or Ronald Jones. I think that Jacquizz Rodgers sort of has a set role in that offense, sort of a third down back role. If you can get them both, if it's like an auction and you can get Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber for cheap, do them both. And that way between them, you'll have a startable running back all year. But the draft capital in a snake draft is just too high to be taking Ronald Jones where you need to take him, even though Peyton Barber is kind of makes up for that because of how lowly he's being drafted right now.
Makes sense.
Yes, sir. I know it does. I said it. I agree. So that's it. That's it. We did it, Mike.
Wow.
That's every single team, a sleeper breakout bust from every team. Some of them better than others, just because when you shoot your horn yourself into a format, sometimes things get a little iffy. But I'm proud of us. We did it. We made it to the other side. So next week, we'll be back with a couple more guys. We're going to have Evan and Waleed on from the website. We're going to have a battle royale. We're going to argue it out. Going to pick some topics and just really go through it. And I think it'll be a good time. Evan's been on the podcast before. His 10 Commandments of Fantasy Football Drafting was part of our draft primer sort of series. And Waleed is extremely funny, literally a stand-up comedian. So it should be a lot of fun.
Do we have 5 minutes?
We have 5 minutes. What can I do for you, sir?
I just wanted to talk to you about our Ant Sports Draft and get your opinion on how it's turning out.
Our what sports draft? I'm sorry?
Our Ant Sports.
Oh, Flea Flicker?
Yeah.
I think that my team is great, except for that it's terrible. Let me look.
What team is yours again?
So here's the thing. What Mike's talking about is Mike and I are doing a fishbowl, a Scott Fishbowl knockoff. It's a slow draft on Flea Flicker. If you don't know the settings, there's tight end premium, super flex, and I believe it's points per first down as well. Mike and I are in a league together. So Mike, here's the thing. I draft on the turn and it's a slow draft. I literally, before pulling up my team, forget who's on my roster. So I got to fool my team up real quick. So how do you think it's going?
Hold on 1 second. Okay. Sorry about that. I would say it's probably not going so well, especially if you're having struggles with keeping an idea of the players that are on your team.
I hop in and I look at who I have and I go, okay, I'll take this guy and this guy. And then I hop back out. But let's see who you've got. Big Ben. You're Swarm B, right?
No, I'm Trumpster Fire.
Oh, well, your username is Swarm B.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You're right. Yes.
So let's see who we got. Man, your roster is not bad, except for the mystery Rishard Matthews. I like your roster. Pretty good. Okay. Pretty good. Big Ben, Mitchell Trubisky, LeSean McCoy. A little iffy on that one. But then you got Freeman or Devonta Freeman, Marshawn Lynch, Jamal Williams. Ooh, AB84, Devontae Adams, Golden Tate, Allen Hurns. Not bad.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're getting deep in it, but Kalen Ballage, not a fan. Rishard Matthews, if we figure out what's wrong with him, that could be a good pick. But Mike Williams is killer. Calvin Ridley. Hey, I already talked about Calvin Ridley, what I think there. You've got RSJ, who I love. But I like my team a little bit. Kirk Cousins, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Mixon, who I'm not sure if that guy's going to be a bust or a breakout. Like, I can't wrap my mind around it because a lot of it has to do with how he's used this year. I think his usage amount will tell us the story. But then I got a guy that I hate, but I drafted him like 3 weeks ago when I thought I liked him, Ronald Jones. But Royce Freeman's doing great. Kerryon Johnson's doing stuff in the preseason. Julio, Kelvin Benjamin, Corey Davis. We got a little bit of dueling Titans wide receivers there. But I leaned into the tight end premium, got Gronk, George Kittle, Eric Ebron. And then I just started picking off sleeper wide receivers that I liked. Kind of wasted a pick in Lamar Jackson because I made that pick and then he went out and stunk in the preseason. And these are deep, deep rosters, so that's why I snagged Lamar Jackson as my fourth quarterback. But I think it's doing all right. I need John Brown, Geronimo Allison, and Michael Gallup to be, let's say, I mean, conservatively, wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. That would be great.
Yeah, well, they're already talking, and they denied the rumors, but I don't think there were rumors that they were looking to ship off Randall Cobb.
I think that is the Packers just begging someone to take him off their hands before they cut him.
Yeah. Yeah, and that speaks a lot to, I think, Geronimo Allison himself.
I think so, too. So, yeah, I like the teams. It's going to be fun. Evan runs it. He ran it last year. I think he's run it the last couple of years. It's just a nice little Scott Fish Bowl for those of us who aren't lucky enough to get into the Scott Fish Bowl.
I know. I'm kind of disappointed about that because I was in the last 3 years. And then, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that'll do it for today. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. This one clocked in at an hour and a half. So if you made it all the way here, we very much appreciate it. Please check us out, Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe, drop us a line, footballabsurdity@gmail.com. We're very lonely. Please reach out to us. Please. Yes. I very much appreciate it. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. And then the week after, it'll be week one preview. We did it. Off season's over, baby. Let's go.
Pretty psyched. All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Eyes mugging too, yada yada. See the mugging back, yada yada. Eyes mugging too, yada yada. Do I know I know how to eyes mugging too, yada yada. See the mugging back, yada yada. Eyes mugging too, yada yada. Do I know how to yeah. Nobody knows where it started. Somebody blew it through a hole. Somebody played it on a fiddle. Somebody sang it and the song was born. Know it's a new sensation. It's the words the bands all sing. You hear it across the nation. No one stop because I'm